Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher and current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder, and really helping students embrace this whole idea of a maker mindset. You can find this podcast at creativeclassroompodcast.com. It's on Stitcher. It's on iTunes. That's where I get my podcasts for the most part, and on the Google Play Store. So if you could check it out, that'd be awesome. If you've never left a review, I would ask that you do that. That would mean the world to me. It's what helps people find this podcast. And if you've never subscribed, take the leap and go for it and subscribe. We're going to be getting into this topic of empowering students. You know, it's a phrase used all the time in education, but what does it really mean? What do we mean when we talk about student-centered learning, when we talk about student choice, when we talk about creativity? And this is the start of a series on this topic. And so I want to begin with, you guessed it, a story. And in this case, my story, my journey toward student-centered learning. So here we go. It was my first year of teaching, and what I had planned was supposed to be like the greatest lesson ever, right? It was supposed to be awesome. I had planned it for hours and hours, I mean days, revising every element until it looked flawless on paper. But now, in the third period of the day, the reality sunk in. My lesson sucked. Not just my lesson, but I could tell this whole project was not going to work. Students weren't engaged. They didn't want to create Civil War newspapers. They didn't want to follow my scripted directions. They didn't want to follow the prompts I had written. And all the things I had done to make it interesting, well, it just wasn't working. They weren't finding it interesting at all. Now, a few students looked engaged on the surface. They were listening, answering discussion questions, participating. A few of them even got excited about one particular piece, drawing the Civil War political cartoons. But for the most part, there was a palpable lack of energy in the classroom. I could tell that something was missing. And it was this: my students didn't own the learning. At the time, I viewed teaching as a content delivery system. I worked tirelessly to create content that would be meaningful, fun, and challenging. When students seemed disinterested, I would try to dress it up with more humor, more pop culture references, whatever I could do to make it seem more entertaining. But it was still the same model. It was my content, and I was delivering it, and they were consuming. That was the model. It was this extra thing that I was giving them, transferring to them, handing to them. It was a product. Now, don't get me wrong. Students sometimes enjoyed bits and pieces of it. Students completed the projects. They finished their work. But the few projects we did that seemed even to be remotely interesting to them were always culminating projects at the end of the unit. And they weren't really projects. They were more like crafts. Like, here you go. Here's what you should do now that we're done with the hard work. I'm going to give you something easy and fun. Our classroom projects looked, honestly, nothing like the kind of projects that people do outside of school. I had strict rules on everything from formatting to the strategies they used to the pace to the style. Everyone had to do the same thing at the same time. In other words, again, it wasn't a project. I handed students these project papers that were essentially paint-by-number instructions. It never occurred to me that students could paint their own pictures, metaphorically. Looking back on it, I realized that these projects had always been about me. Here's what I mean. I chose the resources. I chose the content. I chose the questions. I chose the instructions. I chose the project progress. I chose the tasks. I wrote the objectives. I picked the standards. I asked the questions. I determined whether or not the work was good or not, and I gave them a grade at the end. They were working for me. Now, the interesting thing at the time is that this isn't what I believed. If you had asked me what I believed about learning, I would have said it's about student choice, it's about, you know, student ownership, it's about all these different things. I would have called myself a constructivist, all this kind of stuff. But the thing is, I didn't want to give up control. Even though my students were probably capable of it, I was afraid. There were these questions that swirled around my mind. What if they don't choose the right thing? What if they check out and don't care because they're allowed to? What happens if they make too many decisions and get overwhelmed? I read The Paradox of Choice and I was worried about that piece. Will I be a weak teacher? Will they view me as somehow having less authority? What would it look like for classroom management? What will the principal think of too many students doing too many different things at the same time? Won't students just get lazy and selfish if they get to choose all the time? How will I even know what's going on? What about the ones who can't handle choice? What about the test? What about the curriculum map? Will I be allowed to do this? What if I don't have the right materials? And the list went on and on and on and on. Now, although I compared it to being a content delivery person, I would actually compare it more to being a tourist. And here's what I mean. Looking back on it, I was this tour guide leading my students through the content. Each lesson was carefully packaged as a presentation where I would entertain my students and point out areas of interest. A few students might ask questions, and on a good day, we might even have a discussion, but we never left the tour bus. We stuck tightly to the route that was spelled out by the curriculum map, stopping every few days to take on a new standard and tackle a new objective, but never really going anywhere away from the road. When students were bored, I doubled down on the entertainment factor. When they were confused, I simplified my explanations and made it easier to understand. But we were all doing the same thing. We were going in the same direction, at the same pace, in the same way. And I was the one driving all of the instruction and all of the learning. But then something happened. Everything changed. We lost the map. Here's what I mean. It was one of those lame duck weeks during state testing. I had this one social studies class for 3 hours each day, and we didn't have a curriculum map. So I asked my students a simple question. What do you want to make? I don't know why I didn't ask, what do you want to learn? But I asked what they wanted to make. Now, after a short class discussion, we landed on this documentary project about immigration. Students formed small groups and began researching the topic. What happened next was a mess. I gave many lessons on how to conduct interviews, how to shoot video, how to tell a nonfiction story. We had discussions about themes and topics and ideas and conflict. I met with students one-on-one to go over how to find more credible sources, how to rewrite their scripts. And they put the entire thing on a shared document, constantly editing and going back and forth. Things didn't go smoothly. I want to be very clear about that. A few students didn't finish their parts. We never launched it to a real audience outside of our classroom. Some of the highest performing students were more frustrated than ever before, and they had told me that this was the first time in school that they had faced failure. A few kids were actually in tears when they tried to make something work and it just wasn't working. Still, something emerged from the mess. My students were different. Students who had never turned in homework before began voluntarily shooting videos of immigrants in their neighborhood. They would do these amazing, thought-provoking interviews, and they blew me away. Students who had never asked questions in class were asking hard-hitting interview questions. Students who had once told me I'm not very creative were setting up storyboards and editing videos. they were making history, literally, by recording interviews, adding their own scripts, finding visuals, working collaboratively in teams. The thing was amazing. Messy, yes. Imperfect, absolutely. But amazing. They were empowered. They were excited. They were passionate. They were makers. But the secret ingredient to this project wasn't a maker space. It wasn't a fancy studio. My students shot their videos on their cell phones at a time when cell phone video cameras were really pretty archaic. It wasn't a new program or a district initiative. No, the secret ingredient was ownership. Without the curriculum map, we were forced to go off-road. And although the road was rocky, rocky road. God, I could use some rocky road. It's sunny and it's like 80 degrees here. It has not been like this in Oregon for a long time. Totally digging some rocky road ice cream right now. That would be great. But anyway, we took it off-road and it was an epic adventure. So I want to explore this idea of what off-road learning actually means. The next summer, I spent a good month or so just analyzing every part of my classroom with a single driving question, and it was this. What decisions am I making for my students that they could be making for themselves? It was humbling. I realized that I was working like crazy while my students were honestly bored, or at best, entertained. And that's when I revamped everything, my class rules, my procedures, instructional strategies, lesson plans, projects, assessments, everything. We decided to go off-road, and here's what it would look like from this moment on. Students decided the destination. Instead of sticking to these rigid routes I had designed, I would let them explore the content and move around, figure out where they wanted to actually explore. They would decide on the topics and subtopics based upon their own geeky interests. Number two, students ask their own questions. Instead of watching me, the tour guide, explaining everything or answering a set of predetermined questions that I came up with, students would ask their own questions based upon their own curiosity. Sometimes they would go out on their own and chase a question. Other times they would ask questions of one another and explore ideas as a group, but they would always own the inquiry process, and that piece was significant. Number three, students set the pace. The tourist approaches requires everyone to stay together in a group, right? You never leave your tour group. That's what you're told all the time. But off-road, students can work at their own pace. Some blaze a trail quickly. They run to ideas back and forth, and they love it. Others take their time to learn the new terrain. For some people, something is really, really difficult, and to another person, that's super-duper easy. But nobody has to be left behind in this approach. It's not a race to the top. It's not a contest. It's an epic adventure, and they're defining what makes it epic. Number four, students select the tools. Instead of requiring students to finish specific activities, they would have the option of using whatever tools they found helpful. So maybe one student used note cards for something. Another prefers spreadsheets. Well, they would own the tools and decide on the strategies as they engaged in the projects. Now, I want to point out, there's still a time within this framework to do direct instruction. There's still a moment where I would teach them, for example, how to close read or how to analyze something. I would have a class discussion on a burning question that everybody has connected to ideas. We would still do a debate or a discussion on something connected to history, and that was completely fine. Epic adventures are communal in nature. They require you to engage as a group. Number five, students would decide when they needed help. All scaffolding would be optional, and students would have to self-select it. This gave them more of a sense of ownership. So instead of me setting up, you know, specific tutorials that I required students to use or sentence stems that I required them to use. I would have a place where they could go and self-select. And this, in a way, really honored their sense of ownership and agency. I realized that for the longest time, I had created more and more scaffolding every time kids got frustrated. And what I didn't realize is that I wasn't creating scaffolding. I was creating a cage. They were trapped doing things that I thought they needed in order to access the curriculum. And it was just slowing, I would say, over half of the class down. So by allowing them to self-select, they, again, could own this sense of intervention and enrichment. Now, I, going into that year, was terrified. Terrified? That's not a word. I was terrified. Terrified would be like, I'm terrified of eating something that's fried, which is not true. I love fried food. Anyway, I was terrified. I was afraid that students would get lazy, and that's not what happened. They actually worked harder because they cared about what they were doing. I was afraid that they would get confused and just give up. Instead, they took more creative risks. I was worried we wouldn't get to all the standards. Instead, students spent more time on the skills and standards they needed to hone and less on the ones that they had already mastered. I was terrified of the test, but we always remained at the top half of the test scores. Very rarely at the very top, but we did well. Now, it didn't work perfectly. I want to be completely clear about that. I still had projects that tanked. I had moments when I over-edited and I acted like one of those parents who gives kids too much help in a project and takes away their creative voice. We had moments when students felt rushed. There were always some students who straight up didn't finish at all. We had too much structure and then not enough structure. And even on the best days, there were some students who were feeling unmotivated. And there was very little in those moments that I could do to fix that. Even now, as a college professor, I'm still on this journey of student choice. I still talk too much in class. I still make too many decisions. I have a hard time letting students truly self-manage the process. But I'm convinced of this, that student choice and student ownership works. I'm convinced that the answer is to empower students with voice and choice in their learning. And that when that happens, deeper learning occurs. They ultimately continue to become the lifelong creative learners that we know that they can be. And so that's my journey. That's what I did. And I'll end with this final piece. It was an evolution. It still is an evolution. It takes tons of tiny steps and mistakes and iterations. But ultimately, again, I come back to this, that empowering students is the only way for transformation to actually happen in the classroom. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Again, if you enjoy this show at all, would you leave a review on iTunes? That would mean the world to me. Have a wonderful day and go make something awesome.